It's time for Twink This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. Kevin Toefel from GigaHome 2. Kevin is bringing his Nexus 6 phone. We'll get a first review from Kevin on that. That's exciting. We'll also talk about Lollipop rolling out for a variety of devices today. And Taylor Swift's pulling out of Spotify. What does that mean for the record industry? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 275, recorded November 12th, 2014. We all work for the Dolphins. This Week in Google is brought to you by Braintree. If you're a developer or manager of a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree. Braintree's new V.0 SDK makes it easy to support multiple mobile payment types with one simple integration. To learn more and try out their sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/twit. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, where we talk about Google, yes, but also a lot of stuff about the cloud and Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. Gina Trapani is here, founding editor of Lifehacker. She is hacking her own software at thinkup.com. Mother, daughter.
Sister.
Sister.
Hello.
Hello.
Good to be here.
I wasn't sure, actually. I knew you were a mother and a daughter. I wasn't sure about the sister part.
Yes, three times over.
Three times a sister. Mm-hmm, nice mm-hmm. to see you. A little under the weather earlier. I'm sorry, but I hope you're feeling okay.
A little bit. First cold of the winter, I guess.
It's one of them. I'm a little stuffed up myself. Also here from the City University of New York, from CUNY. And he just flew in from where?
Prague.
Oh, I love Prague. Did you see any of it?
I walked some hours. That's about it. But it's an amazing place.
We'll do this.
I was seen at the European Broadcasters Union news event.
Oh, neat. Oh, that's neat. Well, it's only, what, about 9?
I woke up at 1:30 Prague time. Couldn't get back to sleep.
Oh.
This morning. I got a couple hours on the plane. So I'm
you're groggy.
I'm proggy, yeah.
Yeah, proggy.
Proggy.
Well, if you need to bow out, you can, because we weren't sure if you'd make it, so we brought in a ringer, ladies and gentlemen, from GigaHome, their mobile editor, Kevin Toefel. Hi, Kevin.
Hey there. How are you, Leo?
Great to see you.
Let's be honest, though. You know, Jason said the only reason you want me on the show is because I got one of these Nexus phones.
Yeah! So. Oh, yes, it is. Look at that. You just
10 days.
You enjoy showing that, don't you?
I do. It's nice. We'll talk about it, I know.
It's so big, it takes up the whole frame of your camera.
Actually, I'm pretty small, too, but that's part of it.
This has been a banner year for Android devices, for phones in general, but particularly for Android devices. The ecosystem is clearly mature. The variety and choice available to consumers is unparalleled. Yeah. And it's hard to pick one because there's so many good choices. It started with the HTC One, which is still a gorgeous,
great phone,
beautiful phone. We had the Galaxy S5, which I wasn't as crazy about, although I love the Note 4. Really great phone. Motorola, of course, not to be left out, did a number of phones. They updated the G, which is a low price phone, but still, for many, exactly the right price, size, and feature set. Then the Moto X 2014 edition. Then the Droid Turbo, which frankly is just a Moto X on steroids.
And don't forget the OnePlus One.
The OnePlus One, which we still think maybe it was the winner, the kind of the dark horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see how the Nexus 6 looks. Embarrassing.
And
Kevin, have you played with both?
I have. And the OnePlus One is very nice. It's hard to get, obviously, because of the whole invite system and whatnot. But you're getting a lot of phone for $300.
Yeah, that's the key, right? $300 or $350 for the 64 gig. And the other thing about it, I found no other phone that had its battery life. None. 20 hours in normal use for me is remarkable.
Yeah.
So and that is the I was kind of bitching about this last week. You take the Droid Turbo, you take a phone, you add a massive battery, and then you say, well, what else can we do now that we have all this battery life? Well, let's put a 2.7 gigahertz quad core processor in it and a quad HD screen, and then the battery life goes right back down to normal. You know, it would have been like incredible. So you kind of have a similar situation with the Nexus 6. It's a QHD screen. A lot of pixels to push.
What's the life like on the Nexus?
What's the battery life? Yeah, that's.
I think most people will get through a full day on it. I mean, if you're a heavy-duty power user, I don't think 20 hours is going to fly. It's a 3,220 milliamp hour battery. Comes with that turbo charger, just like the Droid Turbo. It recharges the whole phone in less than 2 hours. It's right. Very, very quick. But, you know, I think most people are good for a day on this.
Good. That's the real question, because in every other respect, it's a beast.
It is.
Is the camera good? Motorola has not historically done great cameras.
You know, Google says it's the best Nexus camera yet, which, you know, that's not a high bar that they've set there. But yes, it's actually quite good. It's surprisingly good. There's still some bugs with Android 5.0. Even the camera app itself crashed on me at least 6 times in the last 10 days. So, you know, there's some things they need to work out. But the actual quality is pretty good. Low light is still a challenge, I think. That's definitely going to be a problem. There's still some better camera phones out there. The Lumias, the iPhone 6, for example, just do better in low light, in my opinion.
And, you know, the truth is it's going to be about as hard to get for some time as a OnePlus One, maybe even harder.
With the OnePlus One, at least you could order one at Motorola.
Did you?
God bless. I got two Twig fans who came in to Twitter and said, order now. And I went in, and the first one, it said, you know, you're... The thing you just ordered isn't in stock anymore, but I'm in my cart. So I refreshed the order and killed one of them, and it's supposedly on its way on November 18th.
Nice. Which one did you get?
The black 64.
Because I had to nice. Settle for, a black 32 or midnight blue 32. I wanted the silver 64. But you know what? This is. I think this really rounds out the year. What a year it has been for smartphones. Wow.
Yeah.
Any size, any shape, lots of power.
Any price,
yeah. I mean, that's the only negative, I guess, on the Nexus 6. At $650 starting point, it's really priced like the other high-end phones.
I don't mean to look a gift horse in the mouth, because you're right, it has been a great year for the variety, but I think it took – the phones arrived, and then the variety spread out. And the question is there now a next development of amazing things phones will do?
I got to say – I think we're now in a very mature space.
I think we are, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine. I guess you could make the camera better. There's no quad HD is already beyond anything anybody cares about. The Droid Turbo is more than 500 dots per inch. Done. There's no point in going. In fact, overdone already. Battery life would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, screens that don't break, totally waterproof front-facing cameras that match back-facing cameras in terms of, you know. Yeah. I mean, I think there's still some catching up that we can do.
I still think... Go ahead, Kevin.
I don't think he said anything.
No, I didn't say a word.
don't put words in my mouth. The guy who interrupts, so I was trying to be good.
Just hearing things now.
I still go for a vision that I'm gonna have on my person, my computer, and the phone is another... accessory device to it.
What? See, I think this is your computer. A Nexus 6 is a computer.
No, I think where it goes, I think that in essence this becomes your computer. That your computer is something that is you and is on you, like you wear it. And this becomes a display unit.
So you're saying the phone is a display unit for the watch?
Well, not the watch. I mean, I don't care. You have something on you, your key fob or your something that's your computer, that's your identity, that's your you. And that it can speak through your phone, your tablet, your laptop, your watch, your glasses, your whatever. I think that's where we eventually go here, is that you kind of have one computer and many accessories.
I think you need a computer in the fifth dimension that is as big as a house. But it has a little viewport on you in your dimensions.
And it can land on comets.
Hey, by the way, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you all get up in the morning? It was 11 a.m. for you, 8 a.m. for us.
Yeah.
But I had to watch it. Even CNN covered it. So it must be news.
I was on the plane. What was there to watch? 7 hours of waiting?
Well, at 8 a.m. it landed, but we didn't get a picture for 30 minutes.
Right.
But just watching the folks at Mission Control and the European Space Agency, when they got the news that it had touched down and seemed to have survived. Remember, they launched this 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
So
yeah, it's crazy.
They've been waiting for today for 10 years, not knowing if it, you know, might miss or crash or all sorts of things.
Nightmares if they had. Are there? I haven't seen. Are there new good pictures up?
Lots of pictures.
Yeah, it's sending out pictures. Oh. There was some issue. I think they have several ways of fixing it to the comet. One, the harpoons did not deploy, but they have screws on the feet which did work, which screwed in.
Well, the thrust that was supposed to push it down didn't deploy.
Right. So there's
harpoons. Did I thought the harpoons did deploy?
I'm not sure. Okay, I might be wrong. And anyway, it's there. I think they need to secure it a little bit. But other than that. There's a picture of the comet.
Yeah, that's going in.
Yes, this is during descent, about 3 kilometers from the surface.
From
there's the little guy.
That one I saw.
Yeah, this is a rendering, I believe. Photo illustration, as they say. No, that's accurate. This is exactly what it looks like. You can see the Arc de Triomphe from there. That's the comet. It's a pretty big little thing. Here's an image of the surface.
That was from the fly around.
They have a satellite going around, and they had deployed the lander from the satellite. So I'm looking, maybe there'll be some more pictures. This is it. This is the set. So this is, but they're going to be, right?
They were supposed to be. They haven't come.
They haven't come yet. Uh-oh. So
they keep losing communication with it. Uh-oh. They got a lot of data, no pictures yet.
The ice screws had been shot by the craft's harpoons and were securing it to the surface. The lander is in great shape. It says that the harpoons did not fire. I'm sorry. And the agency is looking at trying again.
Oh, no, you were right. I was wrong.
After analyzing telemetry, the ESA says it seems the craft's harpoons didn't fire as first thought.
I'm curious which carrier they're using. They're losing signal, and they got 30 minute delays there.
It ain't Verizon.
Today I'll be complaining about AT&T later, but that's okay.
Just really amazing. Just amazing. And you can follow it on Twitter. Just really cool. Just really cool. And it's making sounds. The sounds are at a frequency higher than the capability of human hearing, 40 to 50 millihertz. But if you make it audible and increase it by a factor of 1,000, this is what it... Can you hear my audio? This is the comet singing.
Sounds like dolphin.
It does.
Mm-hmm. It totally does.
What if they're trying to signal the dolphins?
That must be it.
They're in cahoots.
Sounds like Literally. A Star Trek movie.
It feels like a little Douglas Adams, like we actually unknowingly are doing the work of the dolphins to get this thing there. The dolphins sent us a message 10 years ago.
We're doing the work of the dolphins.
And now we're, by playing this, I am now alerting the dolphins.
I knew they were smart.
We are here. Wow.
I'm afraid to play this any longer.
No, it's good.
I don't know. I'm afraid
no,
about
we're
what
doing
might
the
happen.
Work of the dolphins. This is good. In the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where one of the volumes, the dolphins leave, and turns out they were in fact the smartest species on Earth, and they leave a little note saying "so long" and "thanks for all the fish."
I love that line.
So great.
I can kind of listen to this forever. I love it.
I'm blown away by this. We got to do more of this.
It's so ambient. I
Meanwhile, Jeff wants a computer in fifth dimension. all right. So but Jeff and I have ordered. Now you're not, Gina. You're happy with your OnePlus. You're going to stick with that.
I'm going to stick with it. I've been through a few too many phones this year. So as long as I don't destroy this one, I'm going to hold on to it.
What is the update situation there? Because you're running Cyanogen.
Yeah, running Cyanogen. So I think they said 90 days from the AOSP drop.
Okay. There's a new mod that's supposed to be out now for our OnePlus One.
Oh,
but I haven't gotten
yet. R39 or something. Huh?
Well, no. I think it's the bigger number. I think it's 45 or something. But this might fix the problem I'm having with my phone. But I still don't know. It's now a week and a half, and I don't have a working phone.
What's your what?
Wait, whoa, whoa.
AT&T.
Mine worked fine for years with AT&T. I think it's you, Jeff.
Here's the deal, as quick as I can make it. And I've got a video up on the on rundown.
I'm going to pull that up for you.
Every single time that I call, and you'll see this, and it just happened time after time after time after time after time again. And I found, then I dealt with a very nice person on Twitter and a very nice person elsewhere, and then it got escalated. Here's what happens. So I just try to call. Notice I'm trying to call the AT&T retail store.
Yeah.
And it will ring.
And they call
it, and it just ends. It drops.
It just ends.
Well, I think you have a defective phone. And then people start singing.
And then people sing.
Paris last year.
He's lost the signal again. Oh, he's lost the signal again that Jeff Jarvis has. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Beautiful call. Hallelujah. No, it's not a defective phone because I put the SIM in my Nexus 5 and same problem. So I go round and round and round. They keep on saying, well, we're doing some upgrades.
Not to the system. So in your Nexus 5, you drop calls with the
Nexus
same
5
SIM.
Nexus 5 dropped almost every call, 99% of the calls. So then I go into the store to get a new SIM finally. If they tell me that's not going to do any good. I get a new SIM. They tell me to get a SIM. I get a SIM. Doesn't do any good. I finally go to the device repair center, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, yeah, known issue. Nexus 5, 2 weeks. LTE, can't. The only fix we have is to downgrade to 3G. What a hell of a fix, AT&T. That's great. So I'm doing all kinds of troubleshooting. It gets elevated thanks to another Twig fan, a marketing executive. And I get to the person at corporate and where they were saying, oh, we're upgrading. Well, clearly what happened here was that there's been no new software for the Nexus 5 or the OnePlus One. So you guys changed something in your system that made it not work. And then they came back and said, well, no, we haven't changed anything. And they were telling me they were been upgrading the whole time. So they're speaking with forked tongue. And so their big response to me was, buy an AT&T phone.
Oh, that's not a good answer. Yeah. Yeah. And yet I know I've used both the OnePlus and the Nexus 5 on AT&T. So
it seems to be regionally here.
It must be a regional issue.
Now, I went to my good buddy, my good Twig fan buddy, Alex Hugo, who works in a store, who's just been very nice and helped me time and time again. And I've praised him to the hilt to the AT&T executives because this is a guy who cares about AT&T working for its customers. And Alex, thank you for all your help. And there's the woman at corporate denied it, but his theory was just trying to guess there've been issues with voice over LTE. And I don't even know what voice over LTE.
Yeah, well that would make sense. Yeah,
yep. And that's been an issue.
That would make sense.
So yeah, I still have a phone. So when I and I'm in the one hand I'm ready to throw up my hands and have psychofits. On the other hand, I'll wait for my Nexus 6, and I presume it'll work, because if it doesn't, there'll be lots of...
Well, just go to T-Mobile, which you should have done ages ago.
I probably will, yeah, but yeah.
How's T-Mobile in Manhattan? Is it okay?
Yeah.
I love T-Mobile.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I have my grandfathered unlimited data plan with AT&T.
Really? They haven't taken that away from you yet?
Well, this may be...
You know they want to. How can we get Jarvis off of that unlimited data?
Just turn his 4G off.
Yeah, no voice calls. That's one way to do it.
That's done it.
So just to wrap it up on the Nexus 6, you want to give us a quick pros and cons, Kevin? You've used it for 10 days. This is really the most thorough test I've heard about.
Yeah. No, I got a little dog and pony show in New York City with Google about 10 days ago. Walked home with the Nexus 6. You know, it's definitely a big phone right off the bat.
Show us the screen a little bit so we can get a sense.
Sure.
Yeah, it looks big.
Mm-hmm. It's big. I don't have an iPhone 6.
Your hand goes around it without stretching too much?
No, and that's because it's got the nice rounded back like the other Moto phones and all. It's about as big as the iPhone 6 Plus.
It fills the hand, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely fills the hand. You know, I mean, and, you know, next to my head, it's
pretty
big.
Oh, we've gotten over that years ago. That's fine.
Yeah. I do have a Moto X from this year to compare it to.
There you go. That's a good comparison.
Yeah, so I think that's a fair comparison.
Not so much bigger. I mean, it's bigger.
This is my OnePlus One, and my fingers are like all dangly on it, right? I couldn't.
Yeah, you got room.
Yeah. I mean, so right off the bat, it's big. And see, that's kind of, I said in my review, the Nexus 6 is in a very strange place because let's think about it. This is the first time that all the carriers are selling the Nexus phone. It's really a very close copy of an existing phone in the Motorola Moto X and the Droid Turbo and so on. And it's bigger than any phone pretty much out there right now. A few exceptions, the 15, OnePlus
20 One. And the OnePlus One's only 5.5 inches.
Yeah. So this is the Note 4, 6 inches.
The Note 4 is bigger, right?
Note 4 is bigger physically, but a smaller screen. It's 5.7.
Correct. They really did pack in that. It's actually a 5.96 inch display. I call it 6 here, but it's a beautiful display. And Leo, as you said, it's the Quad HD. I mean, it's just gorgeous. You know, you can't see pixels and such. But, you know, so part of me says that this is all great, but really internally, it's got the same guts as, say, the Droid Turbo. It's got the nice big battery. And those are smaller. They're a little easier to handle. So I think a lot of people, you know, if you need a big phone, okay, this is a great one. And it's got Lollipop. The other ones are all getting Lollipop like now.
Yeah.
And they're a little more easier to manage. So it's a nice phone. It's probably the first Nexus that really hasn't cut any corners. There's always something missing, you know, be it a bad display quality or a bad camera or whatever. This is really the first no corner cut Nexus device that I can think of. And it's nice, but it's a handful.
Yeah. So that's what I'm kind of saying is I think we're at a maturity point on this stuff. The processors are more than fast enough. A Turbo has a 2.7 gigahertz quad
same chip.
Core. Same chip as that, 805. Mm-hmm. High-end GPUs in these things. I don't think you need much faster. Lollipop is pretty darn mature. I mean, I think this is all the hard edges have been sanded down.
So what's next? Feels like we should close up shop. We've hit alpha stage.
I think it's possible that this phone you buy this last few months of the year will be the last phone you buy for a couple of years.
Wow. Not you, of course.
Not me. No, I can't go there. But I frankly don't think there'll be much of an improvement going forward. I think this is about as good as you're going to get. Maybe better cameras. I don't know.
You know, there's one thought, though, and this really surprised me, that this is all meant to showcase Android 5.0, which it does.
Right.
But Android 5.0 is Google's 64-bit operating system, and only the Nexus 9 right now has a 64-bit chip. Right. I'm not saying people are going to notice a difference between 32-bit, 64-bit, and so on. But to your point about this may be the last phone you buy for a while, I would have liked it if it had, you know, the Snapdragon 810, which is not yet available, but is 64-bit, for example. Maybe. Then you're future-proofed, you know?
Maybe, although I'm not sure what you get with 64-bit except access to more than 4 gigs of RAM, and none of these devices, the Nexus 9 only has 2 gigs of RAM. So none of these devices use anything really significant with 64 bits, and they're all plenty fast enough. I think 64 bits is like Quad HD, a number that's kind of detached from any real value. It's just, well, it's got to be better. It's twice as many bits. Well, I don't know about that. So, yeah,
what are
I
your
guess.
Predictions about Project Era?
Oh, that's a joke. Come on. We had, remember the visor? Remember
what
that?
Was the visor?
Yeah, the visor had, okay. So this was a Palm device that had modules you could slot in.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Terrible idea. The things fall out. They're janky. They never fits quite as nicely and as beautiful as it would if it were built in. People don't, I don't think consumers say, yes, it's bad enough that there's 12 phones to go in and say, well, okay, now what modules you want installed is way too much. People
It'll
know what
be
they
a hobbyist.
Want.
It'll be a hobbyist.
It's a hobbyist
thing.
Phone. And I think it always has been. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be a successful hobbyist thing, though.
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
Well, but to Kevin's point, you could conceivably modularize the, I mean, it's the whole damn motherboard, but you know, the chip and change the chip.
If you change the chip, it'll cost as much as buying a new phone.
Exactly. That's the problem. Mm-hmm.
So just get a new phone. Here's the visor. We actually have one here.
That's better than the picture I was searching for.
Yeah, no, this is it. So you recognize kind of the Palm form factor, but instead of... But
I remember.
You could put a modem in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And other stuff.
I forgot.
So that's Project Era in a nutshell.
Back to the future.
I know people are so excited about Project Era, and I guess it's the maker movement and the hobbyists and stuff who want to, but it's not even going to be that interesting. You're going to have 8 modules or whatever. You can snap them together.
So that's not what's next.
I think we've got one next. Is there anything you feel like you don't have? By the way, PCs hit this maturity point years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You said it yourself, Jeff. I'm not going to buy another PC, you said. You don't need to.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, the funny is I have this reflex where I my Chromebook is absolutely fine. It's the best one on the market. I still want to get a new one.
Yeah, because there's this consumer urge.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Bad.
You're still using the Pixel, Jeff?
You bet.
I'm he loves loyal. His yep. Pixel. Are you same on it right here. Now?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Actually, I think I've come around on Chromebook. I really see its value for certain users. And I actually recommend it a lot on the radio show for people who just need, if I say, are you just browsing an email? Yeah. Then all you need is a Chromebook. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to worry about security or anything.
That's good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you go to Google right now, I think I might have turned it off. You will be encouraged to donate to fight Ebola, and Google will match your donation 2-for-1. That's pretty cool. Google has pledged how many millions of dollars? $7.5 million.
Facebook was 25 or something. I can't remember. Well, yeah. it was crunches,
for every dollar you give, Google will give $2. They now have 5.7 million pledged on their way to the $7.5 million goal. So Google will give up to $25 million to fight the Ebola crisis. And people are very much responding. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. I just threw $5 their way.
Yeah.
It made me feel good. Tweeted it out. And
I signed
up. It's wallet, so it's really easy.
Yeah, I wanted to do something about it. And in fact, I read an article and I posted it, I think, on my Facebook page. Saying, if you're worried about Ebola, don't elect a Republican. Just give some money to fight Ebola in Africa, because the key is to keep the number of people who have it down, to treat the ones who have it. That's how you keep it from spreading. So at that time, it was a great article on Medium. I'll see if I can find it. But at that time, I gave money to Partners in Health. They're working in Liberia and Sierra Leone. And then I've started a sustaining donation to Doctors Without Borders, because they do great stuff all around, and they're very involved in fighting Ebola.
Great people on Medium about Ebola, and that it's an example of the network society and what's really happening here, and that our vulnerability isn't here on our shores. It is over there, and we've got to fight it there.
It's Ebola. The real reason everyone should panic, and it's by, I don't know how you pronounce her name. Zeynep Tufiski. You know her?
Oh, yeah, she's great. She's brilliant sociologist. She is just brilliant.
And it says, really, the global institutions are broken. The problem is not here in the United States or Europe. The problem is in Africa. Let's go there and fix it. And it's not even that expensive if we just do it. And so she says at the end, so you want to do something about it, donate. So ACT moved me. I said, good. I gave money to Partners in Health, which she recommended, and Doctors Without Borders.
And is TWIT is doing some fundraising at the end of the year, right?
We are. Yeah. We're going to do a not this. I don't want to be self-serving. We're going to do a fun marathon, which we invited all of you to do. We did it last year, our New Year's Eve marathon. But we thought, if we're going to do this, we should really make it for charity. And I asked our team to come up with a charity that was international, was highly rated, 4 or 5 star charity, and was doing good work with Ebola on the ground in Africa. And we came up with the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF. And so, and they're going to partner with us. So we're going to be raising money for UNICEF from 3 a.m. New Year's Eve to 3 a.m. New Year's Day. And we really tried to get all of you out. And
I'm trying to figure it out now.
I know you guys are trying to figure it out. I know Gina can't do it because of the baby, but next year.
I will Skype in.
Yeah, and we'll all Skype in. All our hosts will either be here or Skype in. And what we're really hoping to do is raise a lot of money and awareness and have some fun while we do it. And celebrate New Year's Eve in a geeky fashion.
If it's okay, I think I'll bring Jake.
Oh, okay. It's encouraged.
I thought you'd like that.
We'll put Jake to work.
Oh, good.
So it's interesting that Google and Facebook have both responded. And I have to think this Medium post had something to do with that.
Really?
Yeah. I feel
like she's amazing, and she's highly respected in geek world. Zeynep knows her stuff. She's Turkish, and really brought tremendous perspective on the network world there, and she just understands the sociology of the net brilliantly. I'm a huge fan of hers.
So when you log into Facebook, you've probably already seen a rectangular box that says, We can help stop Ebola. Let's support organizations working in West Africa so they can stop the disease and save lives. Again, the focus on stopping it in Africa, where it's really a problem and people are really sick, instead of worrying about quarantining nurses in New Jersey. They're asking for donations to the International Medical Corps to save the children, or to the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies.
Now, let's note that we are now, the doctor in New York was let out of the hospital like yesterday. So New York is now, the United States is now free of known cases. All the panic that occurred 2 weeks
terrible,
ago.
Terrible, terrible. Zuckerberg donating $25 million of his own dollars. So Google is doing the same, and Mark is $25 million. So that's awesome. I think that's great. This is when our community is doing a good thing, and I'm proud to be a part of that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the proposal President Obama floated on Monday for solving the net neutrality crisis, and get your opinions. This is the beginning of a long conversation, I think. But first, a word from Braintree. If you're a developer or a manager of a mobile app, and you're looking for a way to include payments, you need to know about Braintree. A great way to add their new V.0 SDK will allow you to add Apple Pay, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, and all major credit and debit cards to your app in just a few lines of code. You'll be able to support 130-plus different currencies. It supports all your favorite languages in .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, and Ruby. In fact, they'll even handle the integration for you and walk you through it. Android, iOS, JavaScript clients. It makes it easy to accept payments in a way that your users are thrilled about. 70% of shopping cart transactions stop before the purchase of the product. People just get frustrated by the experience. This solves it. An easy way to accept multiple payment types on mobile with a simple integration. You're going to love this, and I invite you to visit BraintreePayments.com/twit. Play in their sandbox. You can actually give Braintree a try with no commitment. Test your integration before you go into production. And as a little come on, they will give you the first $50,000 in transactions fee-free when you sign up at BraintreePayments.com/twit. BraintreePayments.com/twit. Who's using Braintree? Everybody. Uber uses Braintree. Airbnb uses Braintree. They started with GitHub at the very beginning, and they grew with GitHub. They've all scaled really from early stage startups to successful companies with Braintree. Hotel Tonight, Living Social. Braintree's new V.0 SDK is available right now for you to try. Absolutely free. Integrate it for free and see what it looks like in their sandbox. BraintreePayments.com/twit. And if you decide to integrate it, $50,000 in transactions fee free. Nice way to put Apple Pay in your app. BraintreePayments.com/twit. So President Obama, as a campaign promise, said we're going to preserve a free and open internet. It's the most important, one of the most important technologies in the modern world. Didn't seem to do much about it. In fact, appointed as chairman of the FCC, a fellow that maybe some of us might have felt wasn't really going to look out for our best interests. Actually, he did in some ways. FCC.
There was a great tweet. I forget who did it this week. I think it was Matthew Keyes said that the FCC was trying to can't figure out how to split the baby. And someone said, oh, good, a dead baby.
I feel like Tom Wheeler, the chairman of the FCC, was a lobbyist, we know, for the cable companies and the wireless companies. He's in the Hall of Fame of both. So I had very little faith in him. And yet I feel like he has been trying. The FCC, maybe I'm misreading it, but FCC.
I think Obama gave him cover. I think that's what happened here is that he's trying to play both sides. And Obama, what the hell? He has no Congress. He has no Senate. So what does he have to lose? And by changing, pardon me, I guess AT&T just turned off my lights.
We'll get you, Travis, one way or the other.
And so in a way, it gives him cover to say, okay, well, here's where the bar is. Obama put the bar up here, which is neutral.
So the president, so the FCC proposed open internet rules. Verizon immediately sued. The judge looked at him and said, "Look, FCC, you have a mandate from Congress. Your mandate does not allow you to impose these rules, so we're going to have to agree with Verizon. But nudge, nudge, if you look at the Telecommunications Act, you'll see a thing called Title II that allows you, the FCC, to declare internet service providers to be common carriers. And if you do that, we can assure you that will be fine with us." The judge really gave them a roadmap. Now, then remember, Wheeler made a proposal, which everybody was very upset about. They received, 1.7 million comments in their open comment period. I mean, the most for almost anything except the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, which really is a problem. But they're still kind of fencing around with this. So Obama on Monday said, you know what?
Well, then, Leo, between
Title II.
One more step. Right before Obama, didn't Wheeler come out with this idea of
yes,
putting the baby by being neutral for Netflix but not neutral for consumers?
He said, we will protect the interconnects, the behind-the-scenes stuff. And you saw this happen with Comcast, which slowly throttled down Netflix until all of the Netflix customers on Comcast said, "Boy, this experience sucks." And Comcast said, "Okay, we'll pay you." They basically blackmailed Comcast into paying them. And that's what Comcast thinks anyway. And although I have to say there's arguments on both sides. I don't think it's that clear. So Wheeler said, "Okay, we'll protect that, the interconnects. We'll protect the behind-the-scenes stuff. But we want to stay out of the public internet." I actually don't think that that's necessarily a bad idea. But Obama came in and said, nope, Title II. But he also said, but you don't have to fully enforce it. So
what's an example of discriminatory service on the consumer end that you think is tolerable?
Well, here's okay. So by the way, we're going to do a big debate on this on Twit on Sunday. We have Brett Glass, who is a firebrand and an internet service provider in Wyoming. He's an ISP. He's also been a tech journalist. He's an ISP. And he says any regulation at all of the internet is going to be a problem. You don't want government fiddling with the internet because they don't understand it. It's a blunt instrument. And if you regulate internet service providers as carriers, you're going to make it far worse than it is. We will get on somebody. I don't know who we have. Did we try to get Neil Patel?
We have Dane.
Dane Jasper, who is the CEO of SonicNet, another internet. It's actually a good guy to get on the other side because he's also an internet service provider. And I think he can argue the other side. I hope he can.
He absolutely can.
He's been very
He's very much looking forward to it.
So we'll have a debate between internet service providers about whether they should be regulated as carriers.
And of course, there's an argument here. I mean, the Al Franken argument from a couple of years ago in South by Southwest is the net neutrality is not trying to regulate the internet. It's trying to stop the ISPs from changing the architecture of the net.
I would love it if Title II would just, boom, solve this problem. I remember talking to John Perry Barlow, founder of EFF. He said even the EFF board is very split on this. Some of us are just anti-government. We don't think the government can do a very good job. The internet moves too fast, is too technical. We just don't feel like government is the right solution. But we also recognize that just leaving it up to Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T isn't a great solution either. I mean, I think, agree that what we really wish we had was real competition? That if there were 10 choices, it wouldn't be a problem.
I think that's what that has to be the barrier. Until we have some measure of true competition, there's temporary regulation in place to preserve certain rights under the belief that competition will then deal with this. And the arguments that the phone companies are making, of course, is, of course, they have huge profits, even in these capital-intensive businesses. But they argue that we're not going to invest. But they seemingly are investing. And if the barrier is – if the bar is set at a competitive level that says the regulation will come off when you are this competitive.
Well, okay, I'm going to channel somebody like Jerry Pournelle, who's a right-wing libertarian – who would say, when have you ever seen the government give up any regulation once imposed? In other words, once you give the FCC the power to regulate, are they very likely to say, hey, good, there's competition now. Have fun, guys. We're stopped.
Well, that's why you can sunset it in that way. I mean, listen, I'm not a I may sound like a libertarian sometimes. I'm a Hillary Clinton Democrat, but I think there's a role for government in certain places and not in other places. And I scream generally about the government staying the hell out of the internet, and I generally agree with that.
What right about now, those who argue there isn't any problem right now? Everything working pretty well. I mean, yeah, and Comcast put the screws to Netflix, but Netflix is still making money. They were able to pay those interconnect fees. We've got a pretty, it's working now. As in other words, it's a form of techno panic, to use your own phrase.
Yeah, Jeff. I think that's fair. But I also think, Leo, that at this point, and I just had already had my rant about a phone company, you know, of the month. But if cable companies and telephone companies think that we're going to side with them and give them empathy, man, it's time to pay the piper, guys. You've been treating us like prisoners and like crap for years, and nickel and diming us, and setting all your own rules, and not operating in an open way, and now you expect us to sign with you? We have no trust in you. Sorry, AT&T, you do not have the most reliable 4G network, and I got the proof.
Yeah.
Sorry, cable companies, you throttle us, and I know your margins on internet are unbelievable, and you bundle us and screw us in all kinds of ways, and you don't give us good service. No, we're not going to sympathize with you. We're not going to leave the internet in your hands.
I want to also point out that Title II doesn't say anything about paid prioritization, which is really the issue here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it does impose all sorts of interesting.
I'm nervous about that part too. I agree. Maybe that's Obama's point about selective enforcement. Maybe you just set the principles to say these are the principles that we will enforce.
Title II, and this is the key thing. Title II, subsection 202 says, quote, common carriers, and this would make ISPs common carriers, can't make any unjust or unreasonable discrimination in charges, practices, classifications, regulations, facilities, or services. So Michael Weinberg at Public Knowledge says, under Title II, the FCC would be free to create blanket rules that prohibit problematic discrimination. But I know already that Brett Glass is going to come on and say, yeah, that's fine, but let me tell you some of the other things Title II requires. There are a lot of arcane provisions.
Requires or enables?
Huh?
Requires or enables?
Well, the commission says we will forbear, we will selectively not enforce certain features of Title II. And so that's the thing. Do you trust them to enforce just the good stuff and not everything?
That's the heart of the matter right there. Who do you trust more? The government to be involved or the carriers themselves to, you know, not take advantage of the current situation? And I think that's the big split right there.
Right. I don't trust either of them.
Exactly.
I guess if I had to pick one, I guess I'd pick the government. But God knows, for one thing, that they're clearly influenced by the dollars donated by.
I would pick companies in a competitive marketplace, hands down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But in a non-competitive marketplace, I have issues. Now, people will say back to me, oh, Jarvis, what about you and Google when you defend them? Well, they're in a competitive marketplace and everything except advertising. But there are in fact, choices. We are not imprisoned. We as users, as opposed to advertisers, are not imprisoned by Google. We are imprisoned by the terms of phone companies and the cable companies. And that's to me, is the difference.
We're going to have a heck of a debate on Sunday. I have a lot of prep work to do because this is a very complicated subject.
That's going to be a good show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad you're doing it.
Well, I think we kind of have to. And, you know, even in our own audience, it's very split about how to solve it. I think we all generally agree if there were competition, we wouldn't have to worry. Because if Comcast were screwing you, you'd have somewhere else to go.
Yeah.
Yet Comcast has been able to gobble up even more.
Well, and by the way, that was with the help and support of the Federal Communications Commission, which gave them a monopoly. Now, the argument, if you go back in time, was Comcast said, well, we're not going to build out our system unless we have a monopoly in each region. And so and the FCC felt like, well, if we're going to get these guys to build this, you know, this infrastructure, we got to give them a monopoly. It's very interesting. And I think that we all kind of need to understand it as best we can. The Matthew Inman did, of course, a famous oatmeal response to Ted Cruz's tweet. Net neutrality is Obamacare for the internet. The internet should not operate at the speed of government. And Matthew said, this led me to assume one of two things. Thing one, when you accepted campaign funds, Ted Cruz, from telecom lobbyists last year, they asked that you publicly smear net neutrality. Thing two, you actually don't know what net neutrality is.
I love this guy.
Isn't he great? He says, I can't do anything about thing one. Instead, let me explain what net neutrality is. The problem is all of these very kind of simplistic explanations make a huge amount of sense, and we've seen so many of these. But this isn't what's happening, and I'm not sure that this is, he even says, this is an extreme scenario, not a very likely one.
Well, even the New York Times had a headline this week about well, it's a really simple way to understand net neutrality. It's not that complex. And if you oversimplify it, you ruin it too.
Yeah.
And then the New York Times piece was not bad. It was a fine explanation.
Yeah, and I think Matthew's very smart, and he did a great job. He says net neutrality is a bipartisan issue because net neutrality isn't about control. It's about freedom. And, it seems to me if you are conservative and you believe that, innovation is going to keep this country economically vital, then you must believe in the internet and a free, unfettered internet, too. But, of course, remember, conservatives just don't trust government. So I have to say, if Ted Cruz is against it, I'm for it. Personally, that helps me make a choice. But I think it's actually very complicated.
There's an argument here that says that anything Obama touches gets political cooties.
Yeah, maybe by saying what he said. Yeah. Because now he's provided a target. Do you think it was cover for Tom Wheeler?
In a way, yeah. Wheeler can seem more reasonable or right. Figure it out. Otherwise, it's now going to be known as the Obama net.
Well, right. What we do know that Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T hate Title II, which is another good reason to do it.
Well, fine. Now Wheeler has negotiating power.
Yeah, that's
now
right.
Wheeler can say,
that's a good point.
Okay, folks, the President of the United States and a lot of people, 1.x million, are after you.
Yeah,
let's actually talk now.
Yeah, maybe that actually that could be a very savvy political move there.
But I don't think this. But the problem is the idea that he's going to negotiate net neutrality with the telephone companies because that alone makes my skin crawl.
Such
for
a
them
challenge.
To say.
In areas where there are multiple internet service providers, I do believe that things are better. But in general, in the United States, something like 80% of all Americans only have two choices, your phone company.
I have my Fios, and my Fios is better than my cable setup was. And the two of them have fight each other for features. And, yeah, I think it improves it immensely. That's only two. That's still an oligopoly.
Right. And let's face it, both Verizon and Comcast are kind of in bed on this one.
The New York Times argument was basically was arguing that the net neutrality is the power company, and we turn on the power, we don't know where it comes from, and we get to pay a bill. That's the British model where BT does the last mile and anybody can sell you service over it. We're not anywhere near that.
Well, that's the thing is we can think of solutions: competition, government-owned internet, that kind of thing. A lot of people, including Bob Frankston. It's Bob Frankston, the guy who created VisiCalc, one of the guys who created VisiCalc, are advocating for local municipalities to just use their right of eminent domain to take over the internet wiring in that town. Say, we own this. It's a public utility, and we're going to let any company that wants to provide internet service over these wires do it. And that would be a great solution, but none of these are likely to happen in most areas. We found out why the Google barges didn't fly. They were fire hazards. the Coast Guard said these barges, remember these barges that appeared in Portland, Maine and San Francisco? We didn't know what they were. They were supposedly floating showrooms for Google. Crazy. Millions of dollars spent on these barges. The barges that they bought to recondition alone cost something like $4.5 million. Apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. Coast Guard repeatedly raised fire safety concerns. Google could not answer. They warned that the barges would have over 5,000 gallons of fuel on the main deck, right next to a substantial amount of combustible material. They're floating bombs.
Oh. So you've got your Chromebook aisle, your Nexus aisle, and your fuel aisle. There you go.
And in fact, they dismantled and sold the Portland barge for scrap in August, and they have moved the San Francisco barge, and so much for the barges. You know, I think
is it Christopher Mims, I think, is the columnist for the Journal who did the story. And on Twitter, he was arguing that this was an act of hubris, technology hubris. And I said, you know, maybe, but I often imagine it's right hand, left hand. Not so much that we can get away with this. It's just somebody went and did something, and the company is just too darn big now.
Here's an example of government regulation working exactly like it's supposed to.
Yes. True enough.
Arch neutrality.
Here's another question, though. Does the barges, I thought, were pushed by tow trucks.
Yeah, I don't know why they have fuel. I don't know.
Right. Why do they have fuel?
Apparently they did. Google didn't dispute the point. Yeah, we got 5,000 gallons of fuel. What's your problem?
Yeah, all right. We'll sell it off.
Okay.
100% project.
You know what? You're right. It could blow up. It could blow up. I never thought of that.
Never mind.
Whoops. Google has a Google Drive for genomes. That's interesting. Remember, they killed their health vault.
Well, that was more of a consumer level.
Yeah, this is aimed at hospitals and universities. It's the big genomic data on Google Cloud platform. Google Genomics. Boy, these guys think big.
Man.
Yeah.
Wow. Gotta love them. cloud.google.com/genomics if you'd like to explore genetic variation interactively.
Hey, get me at it.
And who doesn't?
Compare entire cohorts in seconds with SQL-like queries. Compute transition transversion ratios, genome-wide association, allelic frequency, and more. Have we got a cloud for you? And it's easy to sign up. If you don't already have a Google account, make one. Wow. So you have to download the Java client jar file. It's all done in Java. I want to do the changelog. Are you in the mood, Gina Trapani?
Let's do it. All right. Let's do it.
Before we do that, no.
Oh, sorry.
That's called.
I thought that was the throw.
In the business, a tease, not a throw.
Sorry, I got itchy fingers.
It's a tease, not a throw. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital, personalcapital.com. This is a free and very secure, and I can understand you might say, I'm going to give them all my personal financial information. Yeah. Because the back end on this is exactly the same one your bank uses. They already know all your personal financial information. But what you do once you enter all this stuff in, stocks, investments, mortgages, loans, assets, bank accounts, checking accounts, you're going to get a beautiful dashboard. So you see exactly where your money is, where it's going. You can even use this for budgeting, which is great. They have apps for all the devices, including Android Wear Watch apps, so you can get notifications about your investments as you walk around town. Personal Capital will show you how much you're overpaying in fees, how to reduce those fees. We'll get you tailored advice, optimizing your investments, plan for the future from the most granular budgeting all the way up to what am I going to do when I retire? This is great. Why wait? Signing up just takes a minute. It'll pay big, big dividends. And it's absolutely free. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency so you can make better decisions right away. PersonalCapital.com/Twig. Go there, sign up. It'll just take a couple of minutes. Download the free apps and then start saving for your future. Great way to invest. PersonalCapital.com. Now, the throw. It's time for the Google Change Log.
The Google Change Log.
Gina Trapani has the latest from Google.
Google Voice users, you now get MMS support on Verizon wireless users, and native support. So now this means that Google Voice now has supports MMS from all the major carriers in the U.S. and Canada. And if you're using Hangouts with Google Voice, you can send these messages natively. You're not going to get a link to an image. It all shows up right there in your SMS client the way you would you know, in Hangouts, the way that you would expect. So it looks like the only thing we're waiting on at this point is group messaging via MMS, and that apparently will be enabled in a future update. So Google Voice, getting the MMS going on. Yeah, good news. Google Drive has been optimized for iOS 8, so a couple of nice updates for iOS users. You can now open files from Drive and save back to Drive from other apps on your device if you're using iOS 8. You can use Touch ID now to unlock Drive. There was the ability to passcode lock Drive app for a while, but now you get Touch ID. And you can add videos that you store on Google Drive to your iOS device as well. You can save videos from Drive to your device's camera roll. You just tap the file and then say open in and choose save video, and you can save it to your camera roll. So that's pretty nice. Google Keyboard was updated with Material Themes, and Lollipop's Messenger app is now in the Play Store. So, you know, of course, the Google Keyboard now, it got a couple of, there was a refresh, an update, which included light and dark material design themes. You don't see them by default. You have to go into settings and select which theme you want to use if you want to see them. And the Messenger app, which has been introduced in Lollipop, is now available in the Play Store. So if you got a device running Android 4.1 or higher, you can download Messenger now. It's not a replacement for Hangouts. This is the app that ships kind of baked into Android 5.0 Lollipop. It just gives you kind of plain Jane SMS and MMS capabilities. That's in the Play Store now.
It's frustrating because basically Google wants you to use Hangouts.
Yeah, right. It's a little confusing, right? They want you to use Hangouts, but messaging is if you don't want to use Hangouts. Right. You don't want to merge those together.
Hangouts should look that good. Does Hangouts look that good in I should look in Lollipop?
Yeah, Hangouts. Yeah. I mean, it looks similar. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking Messenger. It's almost like now Hangouts design feels a little bit behind some of the other things. it was like one of the first to jump, and now
here's Lollipop. It doesn't look any better at all. It looks exactly the same in Google Hangouts.
Yeah, no, the Hangouts definitely looks the same.
Yeah, Hangouts does look the same. Hangouts hasn't gotten the material design treatment quite yet.
Phil Huff's number is safe.
I'm starting to populate fake.
You are so smart.
Information. It takes a long time to do that, by the way.
Yeah, thank you for doing that. I might steal your. I always show my phone numbers and my information on the air.
I want to create a dummy account that everybody can use.
Yeah, that's a good idea, right? With contacts.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing with the Messenger update too, it is kind of confusing because it was this unified thing. Hey, everybody use Hangouts. This is the future, and but then, that doesn't help for AOSP, right? Because Hangouts is kind of a closed source.
No, you
thing.
Have to,
they
offer
have to have
a messages.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, right.
Too.
Yeah.
And finally, we were talking about this a little bit pre-show. Android 5.0 Lollipop begins rolling out over the air to Nexus devices. I believe that tweet went out today.
Yeah,
so the Nexus 5, the Nexus 7, both generations, but not the LTE 3G versions quite yet, and the Nexus 10 are coming out. I think they tweeted out this afternoon. They're starting to roll out now over the next few hours. Yeah, we just keep tapping that check now button.
Apparently does nothing, but what the heck?
Yeah.
It's like when you're at an elevator and you keep tapping the up button. Come on, elevator, hurry up.
Of course, I was going to save this for my tip, but I might as well just say Google did release the factory images as downloads. So if you want to just go ahead and install it yourself, you can do that if you're willing to deal. You know, it is. It's just a pain. You have to install root?
No, you have to have an unlocked bootloader, but you don't have to root. I mean, it's basically.
The Nexus 7 bootloader is surely not locked.
Yeah, I think they're all unlocked, the Nexus ones. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
If you do flash that, though, you're going to lose your data that's on your device automatically.
Oh.
Unless you get it from OTA. And I think there is actually a way to flash those so that you don't lose the data. I'm not quite sure. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll just end up doing it.
Personally, I'm waiting for the OTA because I'd rather just because I'm lazy.
Until the six comes.
Yeah, you still need the Android developer tools and such to do the flashing. So over the air is much easier.
Oh, well.
Yeah, over the air is way easier.
If you're patient.
No, we're not.
That's the problem. Can see. Anything else?
That's it. That's all I got.
And that's the Google Changelog. Now, supposedly, Motorola did a post on its blog that they are also pushing updates for the G and the X this year and last year's. And somebody in our chat room has a Moto X Pure Edition, which is the one you get on Motomaker with the T-Mobile SIM. And apparently that has, his was updated. So it's a rolling, as always, they're rolling updates. They don't update all the phones at once. So just keep updating.
Yeah, they can't release all the terabytes at once, I guess.
Did you know if you try to update more than 3 times in any hour, it delays the update for up to 24 hours? Says Brian Bones. Is that true?
What?
I haven't heard that.
What?
I haven't heard that.
That ain't
teasing
me. That ain't right.
It could. It could.
Slows you down.
So, Spotify. Remember we talked a little bit about Taylor Swift snubbing Spotify, saying, I don't want to give the impression that I give away my music for free. So she made sure her most recent album, 1989, in fact, I think all of her music is no longer available on Spotify. She says streaming is a grand experiment, but I'm not willing to contribute my life's work to an experiment I don't feel fairly compensates the writers, producers, and artists and creators of this music. Meanwhile, Daniel Ek, the chief executive at Spotify, says, Taylor, you might want to ask your label about that. Because this year we have paid $2 billion in royalties, and he estimated that he had paid at least $6 million this year to Taylor Swift. The problem is it's not Taylor Swift's money. It goes to the label Big Machine. And if Big Machine doesn't share it with Taylor, that's not Spotify's fault.
Leo, if you go to medium.com/@PUD.
I love Philip Kaplan.
He wrote a wonderful piece about this, which he argues that the entire music industry was a grand experiment that lasted only 800 years.
I love it. Thank you, PUD. it's amazing that the old record industry existed in the first place, he says. You know, the record industry has a history of ripping off artists, period. And this doesn't surprise me in the least. When Daniel, and it's very important that Spotify, Daniel stepped right up and said, you know what? We do pay money. And we had on Twit last Sunday, Rob Reed, who started this whole thing, he founded Rhapsody. And he said, we didn't know what to charge, but we talked to the labels, we talked to artists, and it seemed to all involved that if you could get a user. Then remember, this is in the Napster era, too. There was stealing going on. If you can get a user to pay $10 a month, like clockwork, there's more money overall in the pie. More artists are going to get more money overall than if you say, well, no, we're never going to do that. We're only going to sell music. And he was right. I mean, users love it. He was the one. Rhapsody was the one that set that $10 price, which has been pretty much written in stone ever since. And when $2 billion in payments from Spotify to labels this year alone, that's up almost doubled from last year. I think the system works. I don't think the music industry works, and I would agree with Putt on that. He says Mozart didn't sell one copy. Taylor Swift sold 110 million. When record stores were a thing, there were exactly 60 musicians who figured out how to work within the system to become wildly successful. 60 musicians who sold 100 million copies or more. He says, but that was because they took advantage of inefficiencies in the market. How many of those millions of people only wanted one track but had to buy the entire album?
Bingo.
How many of those millions put the album on a shelf and never listened to it? By removing herself from streaming services, which, by the way, she didn't do. She only removed herself from Spotify. She's still on RDO and everything. Taylor Swift is intentionally adding inefficiency back into the market. Well, she can. She's on top, right?
Yeah.
Like Comcast, her product is. And by the way, we had Damon Wayans on Triangulation on Monday. It's exactly what he said as well. He said someone like Taylor Swift can do that. But what about all the artists who nobody's ever heard of? They can't pull out of Spotify. He said too, it's the record labels. They're the ones keeping the money. Like Comcast, her product is popular enough, people will put up with it. And when I believe an artist gets to choose what happens to her art, I still think it's a dick move to her fans.
really? I don't know. I think it's great that Taylor is in such a position of power where she can make that decision. And it seems like that came from a place where she said, I feel like everybody, we're creating this music and we should get more value out of it. I don't know. I think that someone in her position
makes a fortune from her tours.
She absolutely does. But see, this is the thing. I didn't think that this was about her. I feel like she knew that she was in a position, because she sells so well, that if she said something, people would make a big deal about it. And they did.
They also bought 1.3 million copies of 1989.
Yeah.
Maybe because some of those people couldn't get it any other way.
Could have been a purely greedy move. $12 a month? Does she want to charge $15 a month? I mean, or she just doesn't want streaming at all and only wants to do what record stores did for a limited time in this country. I mean, that's the problem is, okay, what's your solution? The whining of I deserve to be paid more for my creativity. Okay, but the world's changed.
Yeah.
A lot of artists don't like Spotify, but I think they need to call their label and say, hey, dude, you know those big checks you're getting from Spotify? I think probably this is a question of bad contracts that didn't consider digital distribution and streaming. And I think the record companies have once again screwed artists. This is nothing new.
So Gina, because I cut you off and I shouldn't have done that. What do you think that it's not like it's happened before? What do you think that the streaming services should be doing?
Well, I mean, I think it's good for someone to question the economics of it, particularly her, because it made waves. I don't know what the solution is. It was interesting to me that she, someone who reaches so many people. I mean, of course, she knew she was going to reach her fans no matter what. Her fans were going to get the music, however they needed to get it. And other artists aren't in that position to do that. But I think most artists are just at the mercy of whoever will distribute their work on whatever terms, because they just want to get out there, right?
Jeff, would you consider putting your book on Oyster Books or somewhere like that, where they charge $10 a month and you can read any book in their library?
Better than that, my book is going to be entirely free on Medium.
Okay, you're the wrong guy to ask.
The whole book.
But what do you think about authors? I mean, Oyster Books is basically Spotify for books.
Yeah, try it. Why not? I mean, that's what Amazon's argument is if you lower the price point, you're going to increase the sales. Part of what you want to do as a writer or a singer is you want to reach more people.
Well, Rob's point was if you're getting...
Let me be very clear here, so I don't want to get in trouble with my family. My daughter is a gigantic Taylor Swift fan.
I love Taylor Swift.
I went to her show in Philadelphia. She puts on an amazing show.
Yeah.
That is her scarcity now, right? She announced her tour. I emailed my wife immediately, said, uh-oh, get your finger ready. We're going to be hitting refresh on the order screen. We're trying to get tickets. It'll be worse than trying to get a Nexus 6. She's created a tremendous scarcity there. Huge tour. The more fans she has, the better off she is. I think I've talked about Paulo Coelho on this show before. He's sold 125 million books. Ungodly amazing. And he's pirated his own books because when he found that new people would discover him in a new country, it would lead to more sales. We're not ready to say that we know what the economic model of music or media should be, because of what it was. I'm not saying that it's right where it is now. It's not. But neither was it necessarily right before for the current reality. We need to experiment with more things. And it's nothing that says you're going to get paid what you used to get paid. But I think Pud's point, too, is it was a tremendous blockbuster-based business. And the variety we have now is greater than we had when artists had to go through the gauntlet. And Taylor Swift, God bless her, is the blockbuster of blockbusters right now. But she's not representative of music.
That's absolutely true.
One question I have, and I don't really know the answer. I mean, I would imagine she probably makes a lot more from the touring than she does from the album sales anyway. It all depends on the contracts.
Eek said that it's a top artist like Taylor Swift is on track to exceed $6 million a year from Spotify.
From Spotify. I got to believe she makes more than that.
Yeah, but that's
concerts.
That's one. There's multiple streaming services.
True.
This is not an insignificant flow of money. The point Rob Reed was making is the music industry was very happy to say, oh, $10 for everybody who listens, that's going to be more than we get selling CDs. And so they were very happy, especially in the world where people were starting to pirate like crazy. Music sales are down 14% this year. Physical music or just digital music sales are down 14% this year already, first half. I think this is viable. And I think Taylor Swift actually is a data point that's FUD that was driven really by a promotional needs, not anything else. And if there's a problem, it's because the record labels are keeping too much, not because they're not making money.
It's always been a slimy business.
The head of her record label, Scott Borchetta, said that they wanted to restrict access to Spotify's paid tier, but Spotify said, no, we won't do that.
What does that mean?
Well, there's free Spotify with ads, so there's revenue still. And there's premium Spotify. That's the $10 a month. And I would guess almost all music fans pay at least one streaming service $10 a month, right? I pay Google my $10. Used to pay Spotify.
Yeah, I pay the $8 for all access.
Yeah.
So she was rejecting the free/ad-based model.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, like, there's something legitimate there for me, and I think that's because I'm equating it with software and web apps, you know, which I've been covering for years. And you know, we went through this time where every app, everything on the web was free, with the idea that it would grow big enough to attract advertisers to support itself. But you know, now that we're several years into it, we see that isn't sustainable. You know, small startups get swallowed up in acquihires because they weren't able to, you know, sustain a business model. And it's hard to sell. I build a subscription service. It's hard to sell a subscription to consumers because folks have been trained that these things are free. And so it kind of puts you in this weird position where it's like, well, if you're making something that's really good, whether that's an app or a song or a movie or whatever it is, you know, that costs money. And who pays? And I think for her to say, you know, I don't want my music to be free. I want people to pay for my music through some way, whether that's the Spotify premium or buying the CD or whatever. I don't think that's necessarily, I don't know, a bad thing.
Other artists have pulled their music off Spotify. I'm reading an article from David Byrne in The Guardian in which he says he's pulled as much of his, David Byrne was the lead man for the Talking Heads. He's pulled as much of his music from Spotify as he can. But he also says, it's kind of interesting, that Spotify generates profits for record labels and free content for consumers, but it spells disaster for artists. Again, it seems to me the problem is record labels. That another kind of upside down quote. This is from from Scott Borchetta of Big Machine, Taylor Swift's label. He says, "We don't want to embarrass the fans. If a fan went and purchased the record, CD, iTunes, whatever, and then their friends go, 'Hey, dude, why'd you pay for it? It's free on Spotify,' we're being completely disrespectful to that super fan who wants to invest, who believes in their favorite artist." Record labels seem crazy. All right. Anything else to say? We're done.
Oh, well.
I think we've said it all.
Actually, you know what? I didn't cover this in the changelog, but I figured we would talk about it separately. Music Key, YouTube Music Key.
Oh, has it launched?
Speaking of subscription music services, no, it's been announced. I think it's going to become available in a limited beta next month. So it's $7.99 a month.
Oh, interesting.
Subscription music service, which is YouTube. So it'll allow offline videos, background playing, ad free.
And it will eventually be $10 a month like everybody else.
Right, right.
And it's bundled with Google Play.
Play Music, yeah.
Play Music. Mm-hmm.
Huh, this is interesting. So if you have Play Music, it's an additional $8 a month?
See,
my understanding is that if you're paying one, you're getting both. But I'm mistaken.
I think you get both together.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, Music Key also includes a subscription to what the company is now calling Google Play Music. It's Spotify competitor, which normally sells for $9.99 a month. You're right. It was $9.99 a month. And so the Google Play Music All Access name is dead.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this is the new Google Play.
Effort, right.
Yeah.
Oh.
What do you get now you didn't get before?
Video, I guess.
Music video.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Through YouTube.
So you get ad-free. Okay, a new way to enjoy music, ad-free anytime, anywhere. Ad-free music, background listening, offline playback.
Listeners, this is what Susan Wojcicki is talking about. She made mention, I think we talked about it last week, of an ad-free YouTube paid experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
YouTube.com/musickey, one word. And you have to sign up. It's not till November 17th, and it's going to be a private beta starting then. Wow. You're going to have a dedicated music tab on your music homepage. So you will have a new YouTube music tab as a subscriber. So there's video discovery. See, I think this is cool and smart. By the way, look who's there, Taylor Swift. I think
song so she can file a complaint and get the show taken down, huh?
Should I? How about this? I want to play Glenn Campbell, who is in the last stages of Alzheimer's.
The saddest story.
And he recorded a new song, which is probably the saddest thing I've ever seen, and yet moving and yet beautiful, called I'm Not Gonna Miss You. And it features images of Clint Campbell as a young man, but he sings it. And he talks about how the world is slipping away from him.
I'm still here, man.
But yet I'm gone. I don't play guitar or sing my song.
It's really quite moving.
He's been so brave to do this publicly.
The man that loved you till the end. You're the last person I will love. You're the last face I will recall. And best of all, I'm not gonna miss you.
It's really beautiful. If you want to, I encourage you to go to YouTube and watch the whole thing. It's on the Vivo channel.
Oh, man,
yeah,
that's
it's like you. It's a little like you, yeah. Glenn. Talk, Glenn, Jeff, Glenn Jarvis is with us. I think I'm losing my mind. It's a little bit like Jeff's, talking about your prostate cancer and being very public about it.
Yeah.
And Alzheimer's is kind of a taboo subject, and mostly because Alzheimer's patients don't really get to
just disappear suddenly.
Yeah.
It was like click and clack. The show went off. What happened? Suddenly
we didn't know what
died.
Happened, and then he's dead. Yeah, Tom Al-Yotzi.
No.
Yeah. So thank you, Glenn Campbell, and his family for publishing that. Okay, let's continue on because now I'm depressed.
Yeah, that was a bummer, but
it's beautiful. I think it's something about it. It's really quite touching.
All right, go ahead.
Go ahead. Do something. Say something.
No, because I got no number. So I'm going to do this for my number. I'm going to fake it.
Save your number. Save your number. Is there anything we missed? Kevin, any story you want to talk about? The Moto 360 available in metal today?
Oh, that's interesting. Not a lot of people realize the Sony smartwatch just came out this week and nobody's talking about it.
Yeah,
the smartwatch 3. What's interesting to me on this one, it's the only one with GPS, which as an avid runner, I really want that in my watch so I can leave my phone behind. Even better, it's Wi-Fi ready, and not too many people have kind of glommed onto that yet. Wi-Fi is not actually supported yet with Android Wear, but obviously it's ready when they do turn it on. So I think you'll be able to sync data right over your home Wi-Fi network with this.
That's interesting.
What are the battery life this thing is going to be then?
Yeah.
Oh, probably not great. Although it does have a trans-reflective screen, so that helps a little bit.
And it is a bigger battery, I think, than the other Moto Wear watches. This is a Moto Wear watch. It also has a fast processor, quad-core A7, Cortex A7. Huh. Very interesting. Same price, $250 as the Moto X. Yeah. Smartwatch 3. It's on the Google Play Store and the devices. I actually really love my Moto 360. I really like it. Yeah.
One problem mine has, when I come back in the country, it doesn't. It gets too confused. It's now on rock time.
It should get that from your phone.
I turn it off and back on again. Then it resyncs.
Huh.
Yeah, but he's getting the time on his phone from AT&T, remember?
Oh. There you go. You actually are on Prague time.
Yeah, it's the response
time. Terrible. All right, let us get to our tips of the week, and we'll let Kevin start things off. just actually you just did with the watch, but you got another?
Sure. I'm always good for another one. Actually, I think Jeff will appreciate this. He and I both use a Chromebook Pixel, and a lot of people actually use Chromebooks, as we know. Talking about Google Drive for iOS reminded me about this. You actually can stream audio and video directly from Google Drive using a Chromebook and a Chromecast. You just go right into your Files app in the Chromecast. Obviously, Google Drive files are there because that's how the file system works in a Chromebook. If you got a Chromecast, just cast that video from the player right on your Chromebook. All of a sudden, it just starts streaming from the cloud just like any other streaming service. So you're not locally streaming it where you get stutters and lags and need a really strong processor. So it was in the developer channel of Chrome OS back in September. I would bet it's probably in beta and close to stable soon.
Very cool. So you store video on your Google Drive.
Well, I got to do something with that terabyte I got with the Pixel. So I throw my Beatles anthology movies up there and whatnot, and I just stream it from the cloud.
Clever.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You can become your own Spotify.
Yeah.
Not with Taylor Swift, but yes.
Gina Trapani, your tip of the week.
All right. I just spotted this, and I haven't had a chance to try it yet, but you can now flip a coin through Google Voice Search. The new search is rolling out, I believe now, the Material Design new refresh to the Google Search app. And among other feature updates, they've got one that you can say, OK, Google, flip a coin.
That's awesome. Can you flip multi-sided die? Like, OK, Google, flip a 20-sided dice?
I don't think so.
No?
But clearly that's in the queue. That's definitely going to happen. Google's just geeky enough for that. So I haven't had a chance to try this. In fact, I don't think I've gotten this update yet, but it looks like it probably works on a Lollipop device. If I don't know if you want to try it on the.
This is the Nexus 7. Doesn't do it. So let's try it on Lollipop. God. Let's try it on Lollipop. No, we're not done yet, my friends. Let's see. We're going to go home. The new home button, which is round. Okay, Google, flip a coin.
Don't make a liar out of me, Google.
It might not have the new Google search update.
So I think it sounds like this update is rolling out. So I guess it didn't ship with Lollipop. Darn.
That's a great thing,
though. Holder to work, Gina?
Say again?
What's that?
The Hodor app. Do you know about that? The
Hodor! Is your Hodor app not working?
Well, if you say Hodor to search, it's supposed to say Hodor back, but I can't get it to do that.
Well, let's try it. Hodor! No.
New Google app. There's also the Hodor.
It tells you what's going to do it, but then it won't do it.
Yeah. I've heard of a Hodor keyboard, and that's all it'll type.
Yeah, I love it. If a new Google app, starting November 12th, that's today, you can say Hodor into the app. The Google app.
Is it an app, or I thought it was just search?
Oh, you know, this is iOS. People use an app. Maybe it's just for iOS. The app goes live at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can even program the app to set an alarm to remind you it's time to hold on. Wow. So anybody got an iPhone? Anybody?
Bueller? I thought you'd switch back to the iPhone, Leo. You were leaving.
Not switch back to the iPhone. What are you, nuts? I'm probably Droid Turboing, although I like the Note 4, and I don't know, maybe the Nexus 6. It's between those three.
What's the longest you've been loyal to?
I used the Moto X for the original Moto X probably for 8 months or something, almost a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love that phone.
Mm-hmm.
Loved that phone. That was a great phone.
You know, just to tag on to what you were talking about, Gina, with the update to search, they're also adding in the ability for you to use OK Google to search into other apps now.
Yeah, that's cool. I think we talked about that last week.
Well, that's part of this update. So this update also brings that capability together.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, very nice.
And I wonder if which apps are using it. They used as an example TripIt. If you did a OK Google within TripIt. I'm sorry.
And a million phones went doo-doo.
Oh, there goes my phone. And my watch.
Yeah.
And my Chromebook.
Apparently, I just have a voice Google likes.
Actually easy for developers to add that. It's like three or four lines, Google said, when they announced that.
That's so cool.
Love that.
I hope a lot of apps do it. Let's see. Jeff, your pseudo
number.
Okay,
I'll fake a number. It's either $199 or $99, depending on what you pay. I want to know, did anybody else going to order an Echo?
Did you order an Echo?
I put in to be invited to do so. I said it was putting – I'm so jet lagged right now. I can't think – Siri in a Pringles can.
It's true.
Yep.
Can we exactly. not go on the show if you get one?
Yeah, sure. If I get one, if I get invited,
let me. We have the just so for people who haven't seen it, we have the.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Let me see if I can find it here. Don't show it yet. Oh, here we go. The early early beta.
Yeah, seen better sitcoms that got canceled.
Family. Yeah. On Echo.
Well, what does it do?
Alexa, what do you do?
I'm a talking cylinder. I exist only for companionship and utility. My existence is utterly meaningless.
Awesome. Huh. Alexa. Play rock music.
Rock music.
Alexa, stop.
Wait, I want to try.
Alexa, what time is it?
It's time for you to calm down.
You actually don't have to yell at it, okay? It uses far-field technology so it can hear you from anywhere in the room.
Echo is pretty neat.
This dad is such a jerk.
All sorts of things. All you have to do is ask.
Alexa, how tall is Mount Everest?
Mount Everest is like probably the biggest mountain. I heard a guy died trying to climb it.
Plus, Echo's really good at keeping track of things like shopping and to-do lists.
Alexa, add wrapping paper to the shopping list.
I've added wrap albums to your shopping list.
Alexa, how many teaspoons are in a tablespoon?
How is it possible a woman your age doesn't know that? Look it up. You insufferable imbeciles.
Okay.
That's not a warning person, but Echo definitely helps him wake up.
Alexa, alarm off.
You gotta get up.
Oh, it's Saturday.
Alexa, what day is it?
Today's the day Ron gets off his ass and makes something out of his life.
I would buy it if it was this way.
Yeah.
This is the well parody, done. Obviously, of what they did, though, which is so great, is they took the actual horribly insufferable Amazon video. I mean, poor dad. He's such an idiot.
He's such a jerk.
And they changed. The only thing they changed was Alexa's responses to make them more appropriate. But Jeff, don't you already have this capability in your phone?
No, I probably won't actually order it. I put in so I can get invited if we talk about it. Does it? Can you imagine? Yeah, I have my phone. I don't. I guess there's an argument that says that if it's just there and on all the time, and you can start having a conversation with the computer, it's Star Trek time. Computer.
Although I have to confess, I spent $600 on the Jibo.
What the heck?
And I'm not going to get that for a year. So. It's the same thing as the two. You haven't seen this? This is
This is your toothbrush.
Your things. Here.
But these are the things that matter. And somewhere in between
is
this guy.
Family
introducing
robot.
Jibo, the world's first family robot. Say hi, Jibo.
Hi, Jibo.
They were totally scooped. I'm sorry to say by Amazon.
Throughout their day. He's the world's best.
Cynthia champion. Brazil, who is a real robotics expert and has done amazing things with robots, is the person behind this. They've raised several million, I think. They've sold quite a few of these. I was one of them. $600.
He's a hands-free helper. You can talk to him.
And it does have a head that turns.
So you don't have to skip a beat.
Excuse me.
Definitely cuter than Echo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lisa just sent a reminder that she's picking you up in half an hour.
Cynthia's really good at creating friendly robots. I remember seeing her at food camp with one of her robots playing with a kid. And the kid just loved the robot. Little kid, like 4-year-old.
And I'll blow your house in.
So I'll tell you what, Jeff. You get the Amazon cylinder.
Hey, where'd you go?
And then I'll have Jibo, and we could have a whole show with them.
I was going to say, this would be a good panel.
Yeah, we just take ourselves off and put them on.
They raised $2.2 million, 5,554 supporters, but they say it'll be probably next, like a year from now before it comes
out.
What
was the little thing with that had the soft cushion?
Oh, the dad, what was it?
The Chumby.
Chumby.
Chumby. Chumby. Yeah. Yeah, it's all. It's
I had
Chumby
a Chumby too. I'm an idiot.
I'm a Chumby.
I'm an idiot. I buy all this stuff.
Chumby was cute.
While we're on me for just one more second, I was in Prague and I did my favorite auto awesome ever. It's on the rundown.
Oh, I want to see it. By the way, there is something that's interesting about this Amazon thing is that somehow Amazon, in a Skunkworks project, must have been going on for years, created voice recognition Amazon style. I mean, that's something that Google took a long time to do. Apple took a long time to do. Microsoft. I mean, ooh, this is really cool. What is this head?
Ooh, neat, Jeff.
That's a sculpture in Prague, and it was made for Otto Awesome. That was all. It was just made for it.
So it's always moving.
Yeah.
Does it move with the wind, or is it mechanized?
No, it's mechanized, and the face goes around. Wow. I just took one chunk of it.
Prague is cool.
It is cool.
Yeah. I'm jealous. All right. Well, I don't have a tool, so I think we can wrap this this puppy up and put a bow on it. Thank you very much for being here, Kevin Toefel, the mobile editor for GigaOM.
Great to have you, Kevin.
And one of the few people in the world who's had a Nexus 6 for...
You weren't too obnoxious about it either, Kevin. I have.
I tried to keep it down. Yeah.
His review is on GigaOM. You want to? I mean, in summary, I think you kind of did summarize it.
Sure. I mean, you know, it's again got the same guts as some of the more current Android phones that are out there. As we said earlier on the show, there's so many great phones to choose from. If you have to have a large, top-notch Android phone, this is definitely one to consider. You won't have to wait for the Lollipop Android as well, Lollipop upgrade as well. So, I mean, it's a nice phone.
It looks like Lollipop's going to get to a number of the Moto phones before the Nexus 6 gets to the stores. T-Mobile was supposed to have it today, and they've announced it's going to be...
Back.
Yeah, they pushed it back. And I think that's because there aren't any of them.
Well, Kevin, what scared me from what you said in your review was that you might also be better off with the battery life of some of the other phones.
Well, when you're pushing all these pixels and a larger display, even though it's an AMOLED screen, which is energy efficient and such, you're going to pay the price in battery life. We still haven't solved that problem. That's what we need for the next big thing in phones is batteries that last for days, right?
I agree.
All right, so if the prices were equal, OnePlus One versus Nexus 6,
If the prices were equal, I probably would go with the 6, I think.
Yeah, I think the OnePlus One is because it's so inexpensive is what makes it so
interesting. What you're getting for the price is tremendous.
It's not a cheaply made phone.
It's a great phone for $300. Mm-hmm. 6 inches is big, too. Have you ever had a 6-inch phone?
I returned a Nexus 4, a Note 3 at one point.
Okay. That wasn't like 6. That was 5.2 or 5.5. I have a Nokia 1520, which is the only 6-inch phone I've tried, and I like it. But
you like the notes from
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've had every note. Hey, I note that you say in your review that instead of Dalvik, the Nexus 6 is using ART, the ART runtime. Is that true for all Lollipop devices now?
I believe yes. It was experimental in Android 4.3, perhaps. But it is the default runtime in Lollipop. So that could be attributable to some of the bugs that I've seen. And I'm not the only one who saw those. I've read the other reviews right before the show, and a lot of people saw the same little buggy things like I did. So maybe there's some runtime compatibility things that need to be resolved. So,
okay, that's interesting. I want to see if I can... Yeah, I've had problems with compatibility with ART with just a handful of programs.
Mm-hmm.
But
that'll change over time, though.
Yeah, especially if Lollipop uses ART.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right. Thank you very much for that. We're really glad to get a review on here. And the camera, you know what? That looks pretty... That is a good-looking cat. That is a
lazy cat that's been sitting here listening for the dolphins next to me this whole show.
But what a great picture. And, I mean, the detail on the fur, that looks good. There's plenty of light, obviously, but that's still...
That's the key.
Yeah.
That's my new 4K monitor looking at a 4K video.
Sweet.
How big is the monitor?
28 inches.
Ooh, how much does that cost?
Amazon refurbed, $459.
Oh.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's the one Samsung was making a lot of hay on.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Now I don't know what to do, but fortunately, I get to own them all.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it's the nice thing. I can try them all, and I guess I have to decide which one to carry. Thank you, Kevin. Great to have you. GigaOM.com.
Appreciate it. Thank you,
Jeff Jarvis, for suffering through sleep deprivation for us today.
Or suffering through me. Thank you.
Yeah. No, you're great. You're always great. I know how hard that is to do what you just did, so thank you. Gina Trapani suffering through the flu.
Not quite the flu, but yeah.
Everybody's limping here.
I got the Rudolph nose going on. Yeah, a lot of fun. Thanks for having me. All right. Quite a crew today. We had somebody. We had sickness, sleep deprivation, the whole thing.
Yeah. Thank you for being
here.
Lots
of fun, as usual.
ThinkUp.com. You got to go there. You can get your free trial of ThinkUp, which is a great insight engine into your social media, Twitter and Facebook, and I use it all the time. I'm getting ThinkUp notifications now, which is really fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah. It's fun to see those.
Testing those out.
Did you know that iTunes Podcast can thank me for 184,000 more people seeing its tweet?
Is that that's an official Apple account? You've got
yeah.
For you.
Yeah. No wonder they keep asking me to retweet them. I used exclamation points in 11 tweets this past month, exclamation point. That's 31% of my tweets, exclamation point. Oh, that's bad. That's really, really bad.
That is bad, Leo. Yeah. You're not a 12-year-old girl.
I have to go back to journalism school.
Hey, nothing wrong with 12-year-old girls.
And I think I am a 12-year-old girl. So my best time for responses between 10 p.m. and 11
p.m. How many exclamation points did you have, Leo?
11.
You only had one. So we normally, if you use double or triple, we chart it. And you didn't have a chart. That means you were pretty restrained and would only use single exclamation points. That's
I don't do double.
I had 39.
Professor of journalism Jeff Jarvis likes his exclamation points, apparently.
Who's the enthusiastic tween now?
Yeah.
Chuche.
This is fun. This is really... Yeah. Anyway, if you haven't got your...
George Takei changed his profile?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Oh, my. This is fun. All your best tweets. All the information. This is good. Thank you so much, Gina. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you,
Kevin. Thank you all for being here. We do Twig, This Week in Google, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC on twit.tv. Please watch live. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video, always available after the fact. Not only at twit.tv/twig, but on youtube.com/thisweekingGoogle. And, of course, all your favorite podcatchers and all the apps and Stitcher and everywhere else you can get a show. Please subscribe. That way you'll hear it every week. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you next time.